Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Monday, November 14th. Today, we're visiting with Colorado Sun outdoor reporter Jason Blevins about a surge in the use of outdoor spaces that is fueling momentum for laws supporting recreation. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our friends and sponsors at Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy can help you find ways to keep your home or business running smoothly while reducing energy use and saving you money. Find everyday tips for using less energy and simple ways to manage your energy budget at xcelenergy.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. When Pope Pius XI beatified the late Francis X. Cabrini on this date in 1938, the Catholic Church recognized one of its most generous modern members, a person whose legacy resonates in Colorado and around the world as a voice for immigrants and ethnic laborers. Born in Italy in 1850, Cabrini founded the Missionary Sisters of the Sacred Heart of Jesus in 1880. The order immigrated to the United States 9 years later, arriving in New York City eager to aid its fellow newcomers. She marveled at American urban life, shuddered at ethnic slurs, and dedicated herself to improving the lot of immigrants. The sisters founded benevolent organizations in 9 states across the country. In less than 3 decades, Cabrini traveled throughout the Western Hemisphere and left her mark of generosity in many communities. At the turn of the 20th century, nuns in Colorado contacted Cabrini to ask for her help on behalf of Italian immigrants working in coal mines and living in destitute conditions. She came to Denver in the fall of 1902 to open a parochial school and aided the poor in improving their status through vocational training. Her orphanage in Denver broke with the tradition of releasing its charges at age 14 to prevent young women from turning to a life of ill repute. Instead, they remained with the sisters until they could marry or provide for themselves. She purchased a mountaintop spot in Jefferson County to build a summer camp for the orphanage. During her last visit to Colorado in 1912, Cabrini supposedly relieved the parched sisters by pointing out a heretofore unknown spring that still flows today. She also laid out a heart and cross in stones, preserved at what is now the Mother Cabrini Shrine. A statue of Jesus Christ erected in the 1950s towers over the shrine, a place of pilgrimage and spectacular views. For her work and reported miracles, Cabrini was the first American to be canonized as a saint. Today, St. Francis Cabrini holds the well-earned distinction as the patron saint of immigrants. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun invites you to hear from working journalists who have been covering the 2022 election season. Hear about their perspectives, experiences, and more with political reporter Jesse Paul. Registration is free. The event will be held virtually on November 17th from 6 to 7 p.m. Learn more at coloradosun.com/events. Next, our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up Podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with you today. And I'm always excited to visit with our outdoor reporter, Jason Blevins, who's with us today. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Carol.
Hey, thanks for coming back. A couple things to talk about that are kind of top of mind. You had a really interesting item in your Outsider newsletter last Thursday about a lot of support, apparently, for an outdoor recreation office at the federal level. And I think it sounds like some of the push behind that is outdoor recreation industry being an $861 billion industry in this country. That's wild. Tell us a little bit about what that level of spending on parts of consumers is potentially fueling.
It's pretty wild to think. 5 years ago, no one measured outdoor recreation. 5 years ago, outdoor recreation was what you did when you weren't at your day job. And now, after 5 years of economic study by the Department of Commerce and annual reports from the Bureau of Economic Analysis, really shows outdoor recreation is quite a vibrant industry, bigger than most of the other industries out there, bigger than pharmacies and energy, pharmaceutical industry, all of energy. It's incredible. All of the auto industry. So in the past 5 years, we've had these economic reports. The latest one shows that outdoor recreation contributes $861.5 billion to the outdoor economy, 1.9% of the national gross domestic product, all the economic activity in the country. And then we've got 18 states that have outdoor recreation offices, We obviously just saw last week pretty strong support for the Democrats. So there's all this kind of alignment. You know, incredible numbers showing up on the economic reports, an impressive run of bipartisan legislation in the past 5-6 years for outdoor recreation, starting with the act that had the Department of Commerce go count and weigh and measure the outdoor recreation economy, all the way to, you know, Great American Outdoors Act and all these different, you know, some of the largest conservation bills we've seen in generations have come down in the past 5 years. So there's a lot of momentum and people are thinking, hey, we've got this sort of blue support for the blue at the national level, big numbers, impressive run of bipartisan legislation that both Democrats and Republicans seem to like. Why don't we go for a federal office? So what that might look like, we don't know. But imagine a federal office of recreation. Maybe it's in the Commerce Department. Maybe it's in the Department of Interior. Maybe it's a cabinet position in the White House, you know, an undersecretary of recreation somewhere. So there's a number of, you know, different ideas, but the momentum's there and the numbers are there. And, you know, this could be, you know, sort of this once in a generation kind of opportunity to really get some legislation to cement a federal office and have a single point in the federal government that brings these 18 states together, that brings these, you know, so many different federal agencies work with outdoor recreation and crosses so many lines. You know, every Bureau of Land Management, you know, from the BLM to the Forest Service to the National Park Service, Fish and Wildlife, they all deal with outdoor recreation. Department of Commerce is now dealing with outdoor recreation with one of the major economic engines in the U.S., as well as incredibly healthy and vibrant during the pandemic and coming out of the pandemic, growing at a rate exponentially larger than the rest of the national economy. So that's the idea, is that there's all this kind of momentum. So maybe this is the time to set up a federal office of recreation.
Yeah, it's a really interesting concept. So 5 years ago, like you said, you know, this wasn't really even on the radar. What was the momentum or the impetus for starting to look at this number in totality and really start the push to think maybe this needs to be managed in a whole new way at the federal level?
Yeah, that was a bill passed during the Trump administration that was the Great American Outdoors Act. And it basically said, let's count outdoor recreation. And that was the first step of really, you know, taking the outdoor recreation economy from the kids' table and kind of putting it at the grown-ups' table. You know, it had spent a number of years kind of in the shadows. And we all knew, you know, hey, this is an incredible rural economic engine. You know, it really drives a lot of rural economies. You know, a lot of tiny little economies in Colorado especially really rely on outdoor recreation. It's a fundamental pillar of a lot of the economic activity in some of the mountain towns. So there was just an idea, if we could quantify, if the federal government could have a number to assign, that way you can go to a lawmaker and say, hey, you know, look at what conservation contributes to you know, our local economies. Hey, look at what, you know, access means to you know, the health of an urban community. So there's just a number of different areas that outdoor recreation can touch in American life. And the idea is, if, you know, you start the conversation on how we can better support it with these economic numbers that we've had for the past 5 years. It's pretty impressive growth over the past 5 years too.
Indeed it is. And I'm sure that the pandemic had a lot to do with that also, and people getting out more and getting out differently, and the migration of people around the country to places where outdoor recreation is more a part of their day-to-day or maybe weekend-to-weekend life than it was previously. And the other thing, when you are thinking about this and talking to folks about it, what do the leaders in Colorado in the outdoor recreation industry, as well as legislators, what's their feelings about this?
Colorado was the second state to form a state recreation office. And like I said, now there's 18. So very, you know, and in many ways, Colorado has positioned itself to be sort of the country's epicenter of outdoor recreation. We have a, you know, pretty vibrant outdoor recreation economy, contributes a lot to our you know, GDP, as well as you know, a number of businesses here that, and obviously we are pretty good at playing outside. So the idea is that, you know, Colorado could be a leader in this. We've got, you know, our two senators, Senator Hickenlooper and Senator Bennett, are apparently supportive of an idea of, you know, an outdoor recreation office. So you know, we've got folks in Colorado heading to DC and kind of pushing on, knocking on as many doors as they can right now, see if this can maybe happen. It's a pretty interesting time for the sort of evolution and next step for the outdoor recreation economy.
It is. And, you know, something else that I wanted to talk about that is tangential to this, a topic that we visited a few weeks before the election is short-term rentals in the mountain towns. And there was a lot of items on the ballot in mountain towns in increasing taxes on short-term rentals. And, you know, we told our listeners we would catch up with that topic after the election. And here we are. What was the outcome of some of those?
So we've spent the past couple few years now really watching this short-term rental industry not just grow, but the communities grapple with how they can better regulate, how they can better, you know, squeeze more revenues and tax out of these short-term rentals that have just exploded in a lot of resort communities, you know, multi-billion-dollar business in across the world, really. So there are 14, 15 communities that voted this last week to on tax issues, whether or not they could increase taxes on short-term rentals to fund affordable housing, different sorts of workforce housing, all ranges of affordable housing, attainable housing, and all but two approved those taxes. It's pretty easy to tax a short-term rental when you're voting on it, right? It's not your tax if you're a resident there. So not super surprising to see it, but this is the second kind of election cycle in a row that we've seen, same as 2020, with Western Slope residents just increasingly inclined to tax short-term rentals to generate money for affordable housing. We saw voters in, this is a long list, Aspen, Carbondale, Dillon, Durango, Glenwood, Slida, Snowmass, Steamboat, Chafee, Eagle, Gunnison, Summit counties. They all approved taxes for short-term rentals. And again, it's not that surprising, but it is a large number. And obviously these were pretty decisive votes with a lot of these residents saying, oh my gosh, we're going to levy, you know, more taxes on the people that come here and visit and not on us. And we get the benefit of, you know, additional revenues for affordable housing. By my thumbnail sketch, close to $40 million was generated will be generated per year in these different communities for affordable housing. So a heck of a bump, especially when you consider some of the federal funding that's coming in. And then this doesn't include a lot of local governments just increasing fees and different things that they can do without having to ask for voter approval. So short-term rentals are for a while there, they were kind of, oh, wow, you know, you can get a house for cheaper in a hotel room, something like that. That's changed. It's not that way anymore. We're going to see taxes of 20 to 25% in several of these communities now. That's on top of, you know, a license cost that's gone up, you know, by $1,000 a year for owners who have these properties. And then you start adding in, you know, some of the fees that the platforms cost. Airbnb and VRBO charge a good bit for themselves. And then one story we haven't really written this year, but I hope to get to, the cleaning companies in mountain towns right now, cleaners are just cleaning up. $50 an hour is how much it costs to get your house clean these days. Pretty incredible. So you're looking at renting a house, you know, like a $100 house is really $200 a night now. So
sure, it is. And we've all seen that when we've gone to, you know, reserve one of those and then maybe clicked away because of that. What are the two communities that did not pass this tax?
Grand Junction and Park County declined to the city of Grand Junction and Park County declined to raise taxes.
What's the forecast on this increase in taxes maybe actually putting a damper on the short-term rental industry overall and more hotels getting, you know, built in some of these communities? What's that going to look like?
Something we are going to be watching very closely. I would hope our readers stay tuned. But, you know, there is some concern. You know, these property owners, there's a number of different types of property owners that own second home rentals that are rented to vacationers. Some of those folks are locals who live in ski towns who found a way to buy a house in their expensive community if they rented to vacationers every summer or something like that. Others are, you know, front rangers, upper middle class type front rangers who, you know, are found a way to get into the market, but in order to offset the cost, they got to rent to vacationers. So it's curious to see, is it possible that you can charge too much and these things will be too expensive that you will actually turn off the flow? Like, will this industry remain as vibrant as it is? And will it be viable for these kind of diverse types of homeowners to and make these investments. You know, it's an sort of an implied purpose of a lot of this increased regulation and caps and limits and increased taxes and increased fees is to, hey, let's see if we can't slow down the growth of the short-term rental industry. So will, if that happens, what does that look like? Who will be the people that are buying these homes? I talked to one fellow, he's a big promoter of short proponent of short-term rentals as kind of critical engines in these rural tourist economies. And, you know, he predicts, quote, villages of foreclosures and second home ghost towns, end quote. So, you know, could these, we kind of return to the scenario where the only people that afford a home in a ski town are the uber wealthy who will visit twice a year and then that house stays dormant. And what does that mean for the restaurants and the bars and the other tourist kind of dependent businesses in those communities that have really grown to appreciate a house that is filled with visitors for 40 weeks a year or something. So I don't know. Interesting to watch.
Right. And that's one of those things that you'll follow for us for sure. You'll keep an eye on that and for our listeners. And it's part of that $861 billion industry that we were talking about earlier too. So everything's tied together out here. Jason, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. Thanks to everybody else who helped produce today's podcast, including our production partners, Pirate Audio. Have a great day out there, everybody. And I sincerely hope that you can join us for the next Daily Sun Up.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. An average of 100 Colorado children each year are returned back to the foster care system from adoptive families, many because of behavioral issues. Over the past decade, more than 1,100 adoptions have been disrupted or dissolved with kids going back to foster care. The Colorado Sun is taking an in-depth look at the children who were failed twice, first when they suffered abuse and neglect and had to enter the system, and again when those adoptions failed and they re-entered care. Through dozens of interviews with adoptive families, young adults who were sent back into the system, child advocates, and child welfare officials, the Sun found a lack of support for both children and parents. Colorado is expanding the process known as cloud seeding to combat the 22-year drought by wringing more snow from every storm teasing the biggest river basins. The new St. Vrain Creek effort joins existing blasts of silver iodide, targeting heavy snow clouds for decades above the Upper Colorado River, the North Platte, the Gunnison, and Grand Mesa basins. Another study is underway to see if cloud seeding could boost flows in the Yampa and White River basins in northwestern Colorado. State water officials say Colorado spends millions of dollars on the ground and aerial-based cloud seeding programs because it works. And speaking of snow, the snowpack on the western slope is off to a good start, and more of Colorado's ski areas are opening earlier than scheduled. But experts caution it is difficult to draw many meaningful conclusions from snow-covered peaks this early in the season. As of Thursday, the statewide snowpack was 140% of the median from 1991 to 2020, and 142% in the Colorado River headwaters area specifically. Typically, on November 9th each year, Colorado is about 8% of the way to achieving statewide median snowpack. Right now, the state is about 12% of the way there. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again on Monday. Before we go, we encourage you to check out a new podcast from our friends at KUNC called The Colorado Dream. Here's a sneak peek.
The new season of The Colorado Dream explores the Black immigrant experience in Aurora. It's told through the eyes of one African woman.
I would sit on the beach and just daydream about coming to America.
And the city of Aurora that's working to become an inclusive home for all.
In the last 20 years, we have a new face of the city.
I'm Stephanie Daniel. Join me for The Colorado Dream, Newcomers Welcome. You can find the series at KUNC.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, a quick message from our editor.
I'm Larry Rickman, editor and co-founder of The Colorado Sun. The Sun is a public benefit corporation, and we rely on the support of listeners and readers like you to produce the nonpartisan, in-depth news that Colorado needs and deserves. Please consider becoming a Sun member for just $5 a month. Learn more at coloradosun.com. Thanks.